This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Coming up on Food Friday, we'll talk with an Irish chef who will serve up some Easter cooking ideas with an Irish twist, and we'll get her recipe for Irish breakfast tortilla. First, tax policies and the impact of policies and laws on taxpayers is a prominent part of presidential campaigns. But it can be hard to separate truth from campaign PR. With the Wisconsin presidential primary coming up on Tuesday, April 5th, we thought it was a good time to try and get a handle on the specifics of the tax plans of the candidates who are still running. Joining us now is Beth Logan. She's the owner of Kozlog Tax Advisors and is the author of The Voter's Guide to Tax Policy 2016. Beth, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with what I think is a really important point. Who actually makes tax policy?
It actually comes from Congress, which pretty much means that their aides write it. The ideas can come from anywhere. If you've ever seeing the way Washington works, sometimes even constituents make comments that lead to things that we've had banking laws changed because an aide complained. So the ideas can come from all sorts of places, but then the congressmen write it and it goes through the legislative process, and the president's real only role is to veto it or sign it.
So that really kind of begs the question, why do presidential candidates talk so much about tax policy?
Well, I think there's two reasons. And the first one is there's an expectation that the president's going to have thoughts on all the different issues. And we're hoping that he or she can effectively communicate them, and then we can respond to those policies based, you know, to see are they going to encourage Congress to do things or are they going to veto a certain policy. So there is some place for the president in it. I think the other thing is taxes become a very hot topic. So the Tea Party calls themselves taxed enough already. And so people want to hear these things, even if it leads nowhere. They want their candidate to be on their side of tax policy.
So when we first scheduled this interview, Beth, there were a lot more candidates that were still in the running. The field has narrowed quite a bit since then. So let's focus in on those that are still in the running. First of all, how did you compile this information?
Well, I started by going through what they had written on their websites. Then I went and dug a little deeper into other sources that I could find, but I was trying to use as close to first-person sources. And then I actually went into New Hampshire, and I tried to find and ask questions of all the candidates. I also contacted all of the campaign offices, and sadly only one responded, and that was Lindsey Graham's team.
We'll be framing a lot of this in terms of the impact on middle-class families. Who falls into the category of middle class?
Well, the average household income is around $50,000 or $55,000 right now. So middle class is usually thought to be somewhere between maybe $35,000 and $100,000. Some people will push middle class up to more like $150,000 or $170,000. The number is just the countrywide average.
So let's start talking about tax policy on the Republican side. You say that Donald Trump removes exemptions for dependents, so taxpayers with families wouldn't have any more deductions than those who do not have minor children or other types of dependents. That seems like a huge change.
It is a large change. There's actually a couple other candidates who had proposed this, and part of this goal is to, quote-unquote, simplify, but what they don't understand in simplifying is that you are having a big impact on certain groups. The irony of Trump's is it's pretty much the exact opposite of where Rubio was going, which is the more children you have, the more deductions you should have. So it's interesting to see that within the Republican Party there is such diversity. He's setting the standard deduction higher, so it's close to having 2.1 children, but he's lowering the tax bracket. So his tax bracket, which I'm assuming would be 39.6%, which is the highest, although he hasn't released his tax return, would actually be lowered to 25%. And in the process, the others would be lowered as well. So he is likely to bring in less money, and actually the Wall Street Journal put out an article thinking that it's going to be significantly less.
You just mentioned tax brackets, and John Kasich wants to reduce the number of tax brackets and also cap the tax bracket, I understand, at the tax rate of 28%. What would that do to the amount of tax revenue that's available?
It would be pretty much the same thing as Donald Trump, because they'd be bringing in less taxes. And he also, Kasich also wants to lower the capital gains tax to only a maximum of 15%. And right now, the only people who pay 20% are those people who are in the highest tax bracket. So they have to be earning something like over $400,000, kind of depends on whether you're single, married, filing jointly, that. But only people making over $400,000 pay 20% in capital gains. And so he's really lowering it for the wealthy. And you could argue that that's not going to make a significant impact because there aren't that many wealthy, but that's who it's really benefiting.
We're talking with Beth Logan. She's the owner of Kozlug Tax Advisors, as well as an enrolled agent. She's a nationally published tax author and wrote The Voter's Guide to Tax Policy 2016. Now, currently, Social Security contributions are made by both the employee and the employer, but Ted Cruz would change that. What's his proposal?
What he's looking at is telling businesses that the only thing they can deduct is cost of goods sold and capital expenses. Today, a business takes their income and they deduct pretty much all of their expenses, which includes wages and rent and utilities and other expenses like that. So by leaving the wages in and not making them deductible, he's taxing the wages at the full amount that he's taxing the income, and that would be 16%. So instead of a business paying 7.65% of FICA and then the employee paying 7.65, he's having the business pay an entire 16%. So that's a little bit more. But my concern with this is people might think, ooh, great, I don't have to pay my 7.65% FICA. But if I'm an employer and I have employees that are currently paying it, now all of a sudden I'm paying the 16%. I'm going to cut their wages to balance out, so I'm not sure it's going to benefit people.
Let's turn to the Democrats now. You quote Hillary Clinton as saying, if your family makes less than $250,000 a year, your taxes won't go up. From what you've seen of her policies, does that ring true?
Yes, that rings true. All of the policies she's released are for higher income, except for one. She does want to change the capital gains. During the George W. Bush administration, they made the capital gains a lower tax rate on long-term capital gains than short-term capital gains or regular wages. She would actually change that long-term from 1 year to 6 years and step it up. So instead of it being capped at 20%, it would each year would be different caps up until you get to 20%. So it would go from 39.6% to 20% over a six-year time instead of over 1 year. And that could have a very minimal impact on lower-income people, but usually people who have a decent amount of capital gains investments have a higher income anyway.
So you've been talking about capital gains, and Bernie Sanders also wants to tax capital gains at the same rate as income, however. What does that mean exactly, and how big a change is that?
Well, that brings us back to where we were in the Bill Clinton administration, because that's how it had been back then. And for most people, their capital gains, for most middle-class people, they have somewhere between zero and, a couple thousand dollars. You might have some people who have received, like employee stock purchase or restricted stock options, who are only making maybe $150,000 a year, who have capital gains, but they're usually not a lot. And this would just raise that to match their wages. What I'm seeing is that the Republicans pretty consistently want to eliminate the estate tax, and so if they maintain control of the House and the Senate, they may push for that. And that would actually be detrimental to the middle class because the estate tax has something called a stepped-up basis, which means you inherit the assets at the value on the day of death. If you remove the estate tax, you then remove this stepped-up basis, and the children are inheriting the house at the value that the parents paid, which could be, you know, $30,000 or $40,000 even. And then they'd have to pay the gains, the same capital gains tax we were talking about, on that profit when they sell the house. So that's one that concerns me because there are so many Republicans that are for it, and I'm not sure there's a thorough understanding of the tax that is going to be added to middle-class families after the death of some, a family member.
Well, Beth Logan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Beth Logan is the owner of Coslog Tax Advisors and is the author of The Voter's Guide to Tax Policy 2016. Coming up next on Food Friday, we'll talk with an Irish chef and TV personality who will offer up some tasty Irish cuisine to serve for Easter. And we'll invite you to join in. Does your family have an Easter tradition or favorite dish? We'd love to hear about it. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.